and welcome to the Ship.Energy podcast. This is Mark Williams broadcasting to you from Cambridge in the UK. We don't always get charterers to come onto our show. They don't always want to come on and talk about what it is they're doing, what initiatives they're supporting. They don't always have the time. And we don't always get the opportunity to bring them in. But I'm very pleased to say that we have a charterer on our show today. My guest is Elisabeth Munk af Rosenschult from IKEA Group. She heads the sustainability at IKEA Supply Chain Operations and is based in Switzerland. Elisabeth joined IKEA in 2016, and one of her key focus areas is the decarbonisation agenda in transportation and logistics, based on what she calls the three principles to reduce, replace and rethink. Elisabeth has a strong background in sustainability from different business sectors, including management consultancy, and has worked internationally for a number of years. She has a Master of Law from Lund University and a Master of Science in Environmental Management and Policy from the International Institute of Industrial Environmental Economics at Lund University. So, Elisabeth, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much, Mark. Great to be here.
It's great to have you on. It's great to have an Elisabeth with an S as well, like my daughter.
Okay.
Elisabeth, IKEA has done a lot of work calculating its carbon footprints. I know this because you told me previously. A lot of work calculating your carbon footprint across the supply chain. Can you tell us about that, please? Our listeners would love to hear that, I'm sure.
But absolutely. Happy to. So, in IKEA, overall IKEA, we are guided by our People and Planet Positive strategy. And we have three focus areas in this strategy. It's about a healthy and sustainable living, about creating a movement to inspire and enable people all over the globe to live a more sustainable everyday life at home. And the second pillar is about becoming a circular and climate positive business by 2030. And then it's about fair and equal, ensuring diversity, being inclusive, providing and advocating for meaningful work and a living wage. So this work around the carbon footprint is really part of this pillar of going climate positive. And it means that we drastically need to reduce the emissions throughout our value chain. And that is goes across IKEA and in our scope 3 emissions, etc. So it's something that we are focusing on a lot, I would say.
When you do the calculations for the carbon footprint, you break this down, I think, into overland and by rail or by road, and not just your own activity, but also your customers' activity as well. And do you break the ocean transport out as a separate sector?
Absolutely. I mean, we are calculating the carbon footprint across the whole of IKEA value chain. And where I'm part of IKEA Supply Chain Operations, where we are responsible for the global transportation of home furnishing products and from our suppliers to the warehouses and stores. So this is the part where I'm lead on sustainability in this part of IKEA. So we are then calculating the whole carbon footprint of IKEA. And if we look specifically on the part of the transportation that we are responsible for, it stands for about almost 5% of the total IKEA carbon footprint. And that 5%, almost 5%, is about 1.2 million tons a year. And approximately 40% of that comes from the ocean shipping part and the rest from land transportation and a smaller portion from the warehousing activities. So that is what we are calculating on a yearly basis, breaking it down then to the different modes, understanding what are the emission factors and also looking at how much biofuels are we using, for example, how much of electricity are we using for different types of modes.
Well, that's interesting. So you're breaking it also down by fuel, and you're already using biofuels or you're using vessels with electrical transport where possible. So are those were those kind of policy steps to reduce CO2 emissions from your ocean shipping, or were they sort of happy accidents? People came to you and said, hey, we can offer you this transport with this low carbon alternative.
Well, it's lovely with happy accidents, but we have a very clear strategy on how to work with this. So we have, based on this people and planet positive strategy, we in supply chain operations then have our own targets based on this. So what we are working towards is to go zero emissions, I would say, across all of our modes of transportation, both ocean and heavy-duty transportation, and also going renewable energy in all our warehousing activities. And we have a target by 2030 to reduce the carbon footprint from every transport that we do by an average of minus 70%. Compared to 2017. So we have very ambitious targets. And what we do, we have our decarb agenda. We call it 3 R's. It's about reduce, replace, and rethink, where reduce is about working with efficiency measures across our value chain to really ensure that we try to utilize less energy by efficiency measures. And there's still a big potential in this area, I would say. And replace is about replacing fossil fuels with alternatives. For example, we are trying to put as much as possible on intermodal solutions, more on rail, short sea, and barge. And we right now have about almost 50% on intermodal solutions. But it's also about using biofuels, where possible, sustainable biofuels. And in the shorter term perspective, I would say, because there will not be enough biofuels in the world to fuel transportation. But in the shorter term, it's an important piece of the puzzle to reduce emissions. And then the third part of this agenda is about rethinking, integrating new types of technologies, new types of fuels into our value chain. But not only about technology and fuels. Often the solutions are already out there in one form or the other. It's about deploying these solutions at larger scale. And in order to do this, we also need some innovation when it comes to collaborations, because collaborations are key in order to really deploy the solutions throughout the industry.
Yeah. I want to come on to that collaboration question in just a second, but interesting to hear you talk about intermodal and rail. How much is it, or how important is it to IKEA to shorten your supply chains? Is that part of the whole process? In one way to, you know, one discussion I often have is along the lines of one way to decarbonize shipping is to do less shipping.
Yes. I mean, of course, optimizing networks is super important. And that is part of our reduce part of our agenda, to see how can we reduce the ton kilometers, of course. That is always part of it. So that is something that we're continuously looking at. For us, if we look at the part where we are in IKEA, it's really about ensuring that whatever we transport on the networks that are there, that it's done as efficiently as possible and going towards zero emission solutions. So that is really our main target. So for us, looking at the relative emissions, I mean, the reducing as much of the average footprint of every transport is super important to us, so that we really can work towards getting to zero emissions eventually.
Yeah. So it's important to optimize, as you say. And I think, yeah, one of the consequences of optimization, I say, I often talk to people about, is that you might see demand for ocean shipping not grow at the levels, for instance, that the IMO assumes it will grow at when it's looking at its 2050 targets. But let's come back to this concept of cooperation that you've mentioned, because I know it's important to you from conversations yes. we previously had. But let's pull that out a little bit for our listeners. For instance, what kind of partnerships are successful decarbonization projects reliant on?
Well, for IKEA, collaboration is key. I mean, we have working very closely with our supply chain and the partners throughout our supply chain. I mean, this is a fundamental part of the success of IKEA. So collaboration is something that we naturally work with. When it comes to, if we look at the climate challenge, which is a very complex challenge, there is a need to collaborate together with others, to come across the different stakeholders across the value chain and find solutions to this. It is not possible for one stakeholder to actually solve the whole thing. We really need to come together to solve it. So these types of collaborations are key. And what we also see now is that there is a general understanding that this is the way forward to find these different types of collaborations. So it's something that we actively work on. We are joining different types of collaborations. We are maybe initiating some collaborations. And those can be in very different formats. So, for example, we have signed the COSEV ambition statement, cargo owners for zero emission vessels, so that we say that by 2040, we will only ship our goods on zero emission vessels, ocean going vessels. We also recently joined EV100 Plus, that is for heavy duty transportation trucks on land, also by 2040, with the ambition to only use zero emission trucks. So there are these types of ambition statements, collaborations going on to find ways to see how to drive this further and come up with solutions and deploy things at a faster pace.
And that's not just about then joining talking shops, joining industry groups. It's about sort of actively promoting, working with suppliers to IKEA.
Absolutely. And I think this is very important. I think it's also kind of a consensus around that it's time for action. It's about now trying to slice this elephant into manageable projects to actually be very concrete in order to move things. Because we cannot solve all the world's problem in one project. We need to slice it into these different pieces, which might not be that easy. This is a bit of a new way of working, I would say, when you collaborate with actors that you maybe normally or traditionally have not worked together with. But it's about coming together and trying to define what is the goal for this type of collaboration. What are we going to achieve? What are the different roles of the actors along this value chain? And what can we do? And what can we do together to align on this and define the goal of what is to be achieved? And then also, I think it's super important in these types of collaborations to that there is a strong facilitator in this process that can take these different actors and guide and lead throughout the process to really keep the momentum and reach the results.
That facilitation element is interesting. I mean, thinking of IKEA as a charterer, who provides that facilitation? Is it something you do? Is it something that the broker provides to you when they're sitting between you and the ship operator? Or
what we are doing, I mean, we are buying all of the transport services. So we are from shipping lines, from transport service providers. So those are the actors that we are in continuous contact with. And we've been working for many years with what we call IWAY, that is our supplier code of conduct that contains both environmental and social conditions, etc. And that has been developed throughout the years. And also we've learned a lot during these years. So that is really a part of this, the type of requirements that we put there. But it's very much now about the collaboration, because it's not about us putting the requirements. We are not the experts on exactly what type of fuel will be the fuel for the future or what type of ships, etc. But we have our part, and we have our part in this equation that we can chip in on. And it's about collaboration is by building on each other. 1 + 1 = 3 in order to really come up with solutions that can be deployed.
Yes. And a conversation I often have with people, it's more to do with tramp shipping, with bulk shipping than with scheduled shipping. But it's that the way a voyage contract for a vessel, just on a single voyage charter party going from A to B, the way that charter party is negotiated is quite adversarial, and the relationship between the ship operator and the cargo owner can be quite adversarial because you're trying to negotiate to your own advantage, which can become a bit of a zero-sum game across the market. Some people are going to win, some people are going to lose, and it averages out. But now we're talking about a different way of coordinating the business activity between the ship operator and the cargo owner, which is, as you say, one where 1 + 1 = 3, not 1 + 1 = 0.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And I mean, and that is the collaboration, right? And also, again, I think it's super important that when starting this collaboration, to really define in the beginning, what are we to achieve here? And to be kind of aligned on this, because it's not easy task. I mean, it's super complex challenges. It's not easy to try to solve this. So it's so important that during this journey to have a foundation of an alignment and agreement on what are we actually going to achieve here, and to have that in mind going on this journey.
One of the great schemes, I think, that have been developed over the last few years for helping to define what decarbonisation is and how it can be achieved is the Green Corridor concept, so that you can test different ship types with different fuels and optimising the entire supply chain to minimise emissions. Has IKEA been involved in any projects like that?
I mean, this is following closely on what is happening in this arena, and I think it's very positive what we are seeing now. And what we're also seeing, that these are initiatives that are popping up a bit, not everywhere, but quite a bit, this initiative. And this is really what we need. We need different types of projects, collaboration, and not solving everything in one go. And I'm really very hopeful for all of the different activities that are going around right now, in discussions with different stakeholders, etc., with the aim to find different solutions. I think there is a need to, we need these lighthouse projects to really guide the way forward. And we also need to have quick learnings, as quick as we can at least, that can guide us on this journey going forward.
Would you think that there's any particular lessons you've learned that you could turn into sort of hints and tips? You know, what would the top three pieces of advice that you could give to other charterers be? As putting you on the spot, rather.
Oh my goodness, that was a difficult question. I would say there is still so much to do regarding this, and we are in the beginning of the transformation journey in the industry. And I would say the learnings is that for us, or I think it's important to, first of all, define to yourself what can you do within your direct sphere of influence, and really identify what can you do there to, and really start that journey to try to influence and impact and reduce emissions, what you really can influence yourself. And then to build from there and try to identify what are the big steps, what are the bold steps that needs to be made in order to make the transformational journey, to really understand where to engage and what are the right stakeholders that together can do something, and then start from there. But really to start the internal journey, not waiting for something perfect to come into play before you move, because the urgency of the climate challenge really calls us, we need to act now and we need to reduce the emissions now.
Yes, one of the things that we hear a lot, one of the themes that comes up a lot in these discussions on our podcast, is that we shouldn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know, don't wait for the perfect solution. Do what we can today and act where you can. And that chimes very much with what you've been telling me.
Absolutely. And also not to let complexities paralyze us, because there is a need to move forward and to try to do at least know what is the right direction approximately to go now, and to have that compass clear in mind. That is really, really important. But on the positive note, I think there are so many things happening right now, and there is an understanding, I would say, across the industry, across the stakeholders, that it is urgent. It is time for action. We need to come together. And it's about finding the ways now to move this forward. And I think I'm positive. I think it's urgent, but it's also doable.
It's great to hear such optimism. I'm optimistic myself. I think not only is it doable, but I think the momentum is now unstoppable. We are at the bottom of the S curve for this energy transition, for this technology transformation, but I think it's almost certainly unstoppable now. Elizabeth, we're coming to the end of our time, but thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us on the Ship Energy Podcast. We really appreciate your insights and your hints and tips for our listeners. Thank you. And catch up with you soon on the conference circuit, no doubt.
Thank you so much, Mark.